Welcome to Generation Football. Coming up, we find out what's happened to Afghanistan's youth women's national football team since they were granted asylum in Portugal in 2021. How has the sport affected their lives and what are their hopes for the future?
I want to play really a football game.
But first, is there life after football for elite players? I sat down with Patrice Evra, France's former football captain.
Right now, there are a billion children affected by violence.
At Manchester United, he won 5 English Premier Leagues and the Champions League. In his memoir, I Love This Game, he opened up for the first time about his experience of abuse as a child.
For people, it was like really weird for Patrice to be talking about child abuse. But because I am a human being.
But he also said that football was the lifeline that saved him. Patrice, thank you for coming to speak to me today.
You're welcome.
You are one of the most successful football players in recent history. But since retiring from football, you've done so many things. You've done punditry, lots of social media, activism. What is the thing you most enjoy doing with your time at the moment?
It's finally don't set up an alarm. No, it's like meeting people, inspiring people, helping people, doing things. I didn't have the time to do it, you know, because I always say when you're a footballer player, you live in a bubble and you are like trapped inside that box and it doesn't allow you to do many things you would like to do. So now, I'll be honest, I feel free as a person, but also mentally, and I can think about different things.
And we should talk about your book. You mentioned the neighborhood, Les Ulis, where you're from, and a lot of really, really successful players came from there, like Thierry Henry, Martial.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think it is about the French suburbs that produces such successful players?
It's so many different nationality, you know, is a mix. And do you know Les Ulis, we are the only little city. We win every trophy, like between me, Henri, and Martial, and like different league. So is so many Patrice Evra, so many Thierry Henry, so many Martial in my little town. Oh, to say it is because it's so many culture. Like you're going to have like people from Senegal, from Algeria, from Mali, and all this mix. And we like playing in the street. I think playing football save you from stealing, to stay away from being naughty or whatever. So football is a way to communicate with other people. And when you live in the street, football is the most important thing.
Many people have spoken about, you know, overcoming hardships as a child, poverty, drugs, violence, but there are very few footballers at your level that have spoken about child abuse as you have done. The book opens with that. Why was it important for you to start the book that way?
I never talked about it before, but where it came is because I opened myself to the woman of my life, Margot, and we were watching something on TV about a pedophile, and we look and she said, oh my God, if someone do that to a kid, I will go crazy. And she saw my face was really like, you know, angry. And she said, are you okay? And I say, yes, I'm fine. She said, no, you're not okay, Patrice, what's the matter? So when I tell her, she cry, of course, and I cry too. From that day, I start to understand, you know, I need to get rid of that toxic masculinity because I grow up as crying is a sign of weakness. So she unlocked something and I was like, okay, I can't like did my autobiography and don't tell everything. And after, of course, for people, it was like really weird for Patrice to be the captain of the French national team, Manchester United, talking about his child abuse. But because I am a human being and I think we need to help each other. And me releasing this book, helping so many other person, I feel really blessed and grateful.
Do you points feel a bit exposed having spoken about it, or has it been positive overall because of the reaction that you've had?
When things happen like that, you don't talk about that because you just like erase them from your memory, and sometimes you can be ashamed about yourself. So it's not like I was like worried about what the public will think about it. My biggest meeting was when I was in Paris and I see my mom and to tell her face to face. My abuse happened when I was 13 years old, and now going to see her when you're 39 and you know, announcing that, she was devastated. She was like, but Patrice, you say you're going to release your book, you're going to mention it. And I say, yes, ma'am. She said, are you sure you're not scared of the... And I said, ma'am, I'm not doing my book for myself. I do it to help other children. And she was like, oh, go for it.
And how do you think that experience, kind of holding on to that for so long, affected you personally or professionally? Did it make a difference, do you think?
But of course, it made me a robot, a machine. You don't trust people. You don't trust the authority because he was my my head teacher. And... actually, I realized every time, you know, I was like, oh, why sometimes I'm aggressive? Why I'm a soldier? Ah, it's because I'm from the street. You know, from the street, you have to pretend to be a gangster, but you're not. It's just a way of surviving. And since I opened myself to Margot and I start to realize, actually, it damaged me so much. I was someone crying, wasn't part of my life. You know, I couldn't believe people even just watching a movie could cry. So I keep all those emotion inside. And you just like, even some people, they were like, wow, Patrice, you know, oh, you always stay strong like that. You never show any weakness. You know, you never feel like you're vulnerable or whatever. But now I'm a different man. You know, I'm more mature and I can control my emotion and I'm happy to cry.
And with all of that experience, and now that you're speaking out about it, how does that link towards the kind of advocacy and outreach work you're doing?
So what I'm trying to achieve is I won't change everything myself, but I think I want to make sure like those kids, you know, have the strength to say like, okay, you know, if Patrice Evra expose himself in front of million people, I think I should talk to someone. So that's the just people to try to open up.
Do you think that there's something about football that specifically makes it difficult to speak about these things compared to other sports, for example, or other spaces?
Yeah, football is, like they say, you can't show any vulnerability. And I play with gay players and they were coming and talking to me because they know how open I was about it. But they will never speak in front of anyone because people will reject them. And I have a perfect example when I was playing for West Ham and someone from the English Federation come and talk about this subject. You know, we need to accept everyone. And you can see in the room, some people were like going crazy and mad. If someone is gay, you have to leave. And after I stood up and I said, but silence to everyone. Can you believe in 2020 at the time, we still like saying we're going to reject, you know, it's not fair.
You've been involved in some of the most kind of contentious debates about race. At one time, you were called a gangster in French government because you had taken a stand and you were supporting one of your fellow players and you went on strike. When you look back at that, how do you feel? And do you think that things have changed now? Do you think things are better or worse?
No, nothing changed. Because like I say, football is a platform where you can send a message. But the problem is the society, like it's the education. No baby born as a racist person or whatever are different. So I'm not surprised. I remember when it was three English players and they missed the penalty and they get a lot of abuse. And people start pointing all the English fans, they are racist. I was like, hold on. You know, it's the same everywhere in football. Like with France, when we strike for Nicolas Anelka, suddenly they forget your French passport. Suddenly you're just a Senegalese. So I was like, this is, let's stop being hypocrite. In the football world, that's the way it happened. But to blame the football instance, it's not just that. It's the society. It's bigger than that. But I think we should do like more than what we're doing. And I say to people, we have to stop pretending. And now, you know, not talking, silence is a crime. And we can change things. But like I say, and I like to give that example about the Super League, and you could see like everyone was unit and the fan, they protest or whatever. I see some of my ex-teammate and pundit, and he was on TV like every minute. People were just talking about it. And I look at it and I was like, but I wish, you know, we got the same energy to fighting, you know, against racism. The truth is when, you know, you don't touch the pocket of people, they won't change things.
A number of high-profile black men, including LeBron James and Daniel Kaluuya, have spoken about that addictive feeling of being in the zone at the top of your game and how winning can become this euphoric thing that you're always chasing. Is that how you felt in 2014 after intensely playing with Manchester United? In the book, you say during that time you felt quite depressed.
You're addicted. You're a robot, and especially, you know, when you play under someone like Sir Alex Ferguson. Ferguson teach you winning is not important. Winning is normal. And every year, if I don't win the league or the Champions or whatever, you feel like a failure. I remember sometime we were like scoring goal or whatever. I was even like, don't need to celebrate because it's normal. It's your job. But actually, it's not. If you ask me, you know, I don't live with any regret, but you can't enjoy the moment because it's so much pressure, so much focus. And when you play for France or Brazil or England or whatever, people expect you to win the tournament. So, you know, when you don't have a good tournament, after you have 1 month's holiday, every day people will talk about it. You have to go back to your club. You don't have time to recharge. That's why we should leave the World Cup every 4 years if we care about the mental health of the player, because they are a human being. And we need to stop thinking about business, because this is business. This is money. But what about the mental health? And I know we are toys. You get injury, out, we buy a new player.
And you've been so successful with football. It's given you the freedom to travel and be in different places. And I wonder if you would have been able to have that kind of growth and experience if you hadn't played football, and what would have happened if you didn't have the career you'd had, whether or not you would have made that.
Football saved my life. Football allowed me to speak 6 different languages. I wasn't that great at school. But, you know, traveling with the team is a luxury. That's why I say to every child in the world, when you get the opportunity to travel, to meet different people, culture, do it. You open your mind. The world is so big. But if you stay just where you live and you don't travel, you won't understand the world. You won't understand different people, different religion. But of course, where I grew up, most of my friends, you know, some of them are dead. Some one of them are in jail. It could be like a bad journey for Patrice. That's why I always say I feel blessed and grateful.
You do have a very calm energy about you. You know, I can feel like what you're saying to me, and that you've been through this process and really kind of put things in their place. Is that a lot of that down to the book, or what were you going to say?
I really don't know. It's just like I'm so passionate about life, and I don't like to find excuse. When you get sexually abused at the age of 13, you grow up with this trauma. When, you know, you grow up in the street, it's all about, like, surviving. And when you're born as a black person, it's a disadvantage in this world. I don't have the answer. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you it's because I talk with Margot, because of my book. I don't have the answer.
It's just nice to see anyway, you know?
It can happen. It can happen, and it's beautiful. Because even many people, they were like, wow, Patrice, you're so nice. You can be a clown. You can be funny, whatever. But when you're angry, there's something different in your eyes. It's a fire, something dark. We all have a dark side. And I think me was become a lot from my trauma, and I realized that.
When have you felt the most satisfied?
Now. I feel content. And when you play, you're never content, because you keep chasing, winning, 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 and all your emotion is on the side. Now I'm living my best life.
I love that for you. On that note, I just want to say thank you so much,
Patrice,
for coming and speaking to me.
Thank you.
It was no ordinary football tour. As the Taliban gained back control of Afghanistan in 2021, it took numerous failed attempts, a safe house, 2 flights, and the diplomatic efforts of 4 countries for these players from the country's youth women's national football team to make it to this Portuguese pitch. 24-year-old Afghan-Canadian Fakunda Mukhtaj, captain of the Afghan women's national team, coordinated the evacuation of over 200 footballers and family members.
Last time I was in Portugal, so a couple months ago.
I joined her on a visit to see how the girls are settling into their new life in Portugal after their perilous journey.
When the Taliban took over Afghanistan and the government fell, the Football Federation asked me to help evacuate the youth national players because their lives were at risk. And so immediately I started looking for possibilities to get them out. Unfortunately, I didn't get the response that I was looking for in Canada. And so Kat Fostroyar, the former Iranian national team head coach, she's an Iranian-American. She connected me with U.S. government officials through her sister, and immediately we got started on an evacuation.
Of all the countries in the world that you could be evacuating refugees to, why was it Portugal?
It just made sense for everyone to come to one nation, and Portugal was willing to support them and their family members as well, whereas other nations just wanted to support the girls, and that just wasn't going to be a viable option.
Can you tell me a little bit about the girls and what they're like?
So the girls are predominantly 14 to 18 years old. They are some of the most passionate and dedicated girls to the game. Some of their parents supported them, but a lot of them didn't and didn't know that they were competing and weren't always in awe of them being an athlete. So today we're going to visit Sorayas. Unfortunately, she did not come with her parents. And so she's looking after her siblings. She's playing football. She's learning online. She's doing an incredible job.
Porque quando eu jogar futebol, eu jogo futebol, eu estou com dores de perna.
Soraya Sakizadeh wasn't able to make it out on the first flight. Three months later, she made it onto another flight that Farkunda negotiated. What's your story with football? How did you get into it?
When she was in fifth grade, when she was younger, so she actually does like work, has a passion for like circus and juggling and stuff. And then kids would play like football, like girls and boys together there. And so she would join in, and that's kind of where she like began playing. Him and one of her friends were playing on the national team, and like the youth national U15 team, and asked her to come like try out. So she tried out, got accepted into the, like made the team.
And how passionately do you feel that you want to continue?
She wants to continue.
You're still speaking to your parents and they're over there. Why couldn't they come with you?
خب هر بازیکن حق داشت چهار نفره بخوایم من پدرم گفتم پدرم گفت بدون مادرت نمیرم مادرم گفتم بدون پدر... او هم گفت اگر تو من بدون پدرت نمیرم جایی مجبور اینمی دو خوارم یک یادن ما آوردم دیگه دومی که در کشور آمدیم که دوارشش معلومات نداشتم اقدر اینجا رسیدم معلومات پیدا کردم دیگه امی که پدر مادر نیست برای من مشکل است.
How are they doing?
اونا خوب هستن حالا. خوب هستن خب مگم دق شدن. اولا که انفجار چیزا نبود. تا مو روزه که انفجار نشده بود. هر روز میگفت گریان میکنید. مادر بخی گریان میکنید میگفت کاش که نمیرفتین. همینجا آرامی شده کاش که ایج نمیرفتین میبودین. اما مو روز که انفجار شد شامش زنگ زد جیگرخونم بودن گفت شکر که رفتین از این وضعیت. خوب است که خیر است اما رقم است نصد خوب است که رفتین.
Do you feel safe here? Is it all good?
اولو میترسیمش بیرون برآمدن میتونستیم ما یک ما پشت نان میرفتیم از چهار ما یک جای پس می اومدیم.
No, you're the mess. So you're looking after your siblings. That's a big responsibility. How do you find it?
بسیار سخت است. راستیم. بر فعلا خوب وظیفه نیست فقط فوتبال خودم میرم درس خود در خانه میخوانم بر شانسه رستگی میتونم اما وقتی که وظیفه بگیرم مسئولیت خودم زیاد میشه وقت نمیفهم پیش برده میتون نمیتونم اما خوبتر است یعنی زودتر اینا اونا را میگم که زودتر یعنی بخواین فامیلا را در تلاشش هست که بخواین مگم میگن یک سال بعد
Quatro, nove, trinta e seis, Por isso chamo aqui ao palco os atletas africanos que estão e também estão aqui para verem todos.
Because the girls are spread out across the country, events like this award ceremony are an opportunity for them to catch up.
Thank you so much for taking care of the youth national players and continue to empower these young girls. Thank you. Muito obrigada.
It was also a chance for me to meet other players on the team.
What's the transition been like for you over the period of months that you've been here?
Actually, it's good. It's good, like, we have a new place to live and we have our own freedom. But you know that it has also their hardship, like, oh, we don't know the language, we are just trying to adapt to the new environment. You know that Afghanistan is a different country completely.
Are you still in touch with a lot of people from back in Afghanistan?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's that relationship like now that you're here? I mean, it's interesting. It's what?
Guilt.
Guilt.
I personally feel so bad.
You feel guilty?
Yeah.
I feel so guilty.
Sometimes I think that, oh, I'm guilty because why I cannot help my people and why I don't have any power today. And you know that the way that can make me calm is that to think about the future. So try a lot right now, try hard, and make it stronger that can help their people, like that the people can be proud of her.
Give me a hug.
So
thank you.
An hour and a half from Lisbon, 17-year-old Nazanin Salimi is training with her local club.
I was told that you came on the second round of flights. What was that experience like for you?
In diga football nametonam, diga nametonam as khana berayim chun ba wujud talbay chizay imkan pazir nabud va khoshbakhtana ke taqriban yak ma ya kamtar az yak ma ba'dash khan farkhunda mohtaj bar ma message kard ke yani ma کوشش میکنیم که امی گروپ دومی که در افغانستان مانده اونا را بکشیم.
And I've heard that you are a star player and that you're going to play some international games. That must be really exciting. What is your kind of vision of the future when it comes to football?
میخوایم که یعنی واقعا یک ستاره فوتبال باشم و همچنان در آینده میخوایم که یک شخصی باشم که یعنی دخترای افغان مردم افغان بوده که یعنی کسی بود که خواست و رسید به جایی که میخواست رسید.
And who are your role models?
از نظر فوتبال الگوی ما میسی و رونالدو است، ولی خب یعنی نمیخوایم که مثل اونا باشم، میخوایم که خودم باشم، ولی یعنی چی رقم بگویم که الگوی ما اونا هستم، ولی نمیخوایم که مثل اونا باشم، میخوایم بهتر از اونا باشم، اوقدر تلاش کنم که خیلی بهتر از اونا باشم و همین.
Farkhunda has strong ambitions for the future of these players and for the Afghan Women's League.
We might not be in Afghanistan anymore. The sport might be on ban for female footballers, but the mission is to get that restarted, allowing them to inspire future generations as well. And we're back on the international stage, competing in FIFA competitions and international friendlies.